Hello, and welcome back to the Center for Children, Families, and Workforce Development podcast at the University of Montana. I'm Zach Reamer, and today I'll be bringing you part two of a conversation I had with occupational therapist Chris Graydon. If you missed the first part, you might want to go back and give it a listen before you go on with this episode. In part one, Chris and I talked about what an occupational therapist, or OT for short, is and the therapies they use to help kids build skills and overcome difficulties that interfere with their occupation of living. Chris does a great job explaining this more in depth, especially as it pertains to kids with brain-based disabilities. So go on and listen to part one and then come right on back. Okay, so when we left off on the last episode, we were talking about the types of therapies and how they can be individualized to each kid. This episode, we'll hear more about some of the innovative solutions OTs come up with in their therapies. But first, I wanted to know more about the process of creating the interventions for these kids, when you know something's working, and maybe when it's not. So let's go right back into our conversation. And it sounds like it's sometimes hard to know where to start because you have such a broad set of tools. I guess my question around that is, what informs your choice? Like, how do you know what therapy we should use? And then more importantly, I think, is how do you know you're being successful? What are the signs that this is working?
Yeah, so clinical reasoning is part of what I do all the time, is trying to figure out what's going on and how to best help this child. So there's a little boy that actually I was just writing up his plan of care. As I'm evaluating a child, I'm looking at different areas of human occupation, but I'm also looking at what's his fine motor like, what's his visual perception like. I do vision testing. Sometimes I'll look to see, how are they eating? Are they able to use utensils? I mean, there's so many different factors that I kind of try to look at the big picture, and I will often give the parent or the caretaker a form that just kind of can give me some areas that they're concerned about, like, why are you coming to occupational therapy? What is it that you, why were you referred, or this child was referred? And so this boy I saw actually when he was about 2.5, he had some sensory issues at the time. His speech and language was a little delayed. And then he was recently evaluated by the pediatric specialty clinic, and they thought that the mom was thinking that possibly he might be on the autistic spectrum, but when they evaluated him, the psychologist felt that he has nonverbal learning disorder, which is it's a nonverbal learning disorder. It's a visual spatial issue more. So as I was writing up his plan of care, I was looking at, okay, when I did the testing too, his visual perception was down on the testing. And so I'm going to give him some activities that are going to focus on those skills that he seems to have deficits in. Mm-hmm. And then also, how does that impact his human occupation, which is what happens is he gets really frustrated and has difficulty with things that aren't routine and being able to follow through in a consistent way. In other words, he wants it to be consistent, and if it changes, he has an emotional meltdown. Mm-hmm. So it's impacting him. So when he gets challenged even more, and as he starts, he's starting into kindergarten, that's going to be a challenge because he's got to be able to perform certain activities, and when he's challenged, he's probably going to have some emotional dysregulation, and they're going to see behaviors on top of it. So we're going to try to address those underlying areas that he has deficits in. So that kind of drives, what am I going to do? Like, is he having trouble with dressing? Is he's on a restricted diet because of feeding and eating issues that are more, he has gut issues. So he is on a gluten-free, casein-free diet. The mom found that he would have meltdowns if he had gluten. Like, he would just, it was almost immediate that they would see some sort of deficit as a result. So yeah, that's another area like that has to be addressed, right? Okay, if he's on a diet, how does that impact him? And what can we do to help? So he is seen by a GI doctor, but so I'm going to start seeing him. But the first thing I'm going to do is try to develop a rapport with this child, because if I don't have a rapport with him, I'm not going to get anything. I got to have a relationship with him. So we're going to do some fun things. You know, I'll try to pull out some fun things that I have, but things that he might be interested in. We're going to focus on that probably the first time when he's here. Okay. And I do some instruction with the parent and try to include them in on the sessions, because it's got to be followed through, right?
Yeah, and you've read my mind for my next question. You get to spend only so much time per week with these kids.
Right.
What's the advice you give to parents, and,
right,
and how do you talk to them about following through on these therapies and,
right,
working with these kids?
Right, so depending on who the child is and what's going on, I will often either try to give one thing each time for them to work on. I try not to overwhelm the family, because it also is very overwhelming for some families. Like, this is 24/7 for them. And mm-hmm. So asking them to do it in a way that makes sense. So if a kiddo can't tie his shoe, for instance, I will work on that with him and give him some of the skills and then show the mom how I'm doing that. But it's not a reasonable expectation when the mom's trying to get out of the house to go to work that she have this kid try to tie his shoe before he goes to school. Mm-hmm. Not until he's proficient at it, because it's only going to be frustration, you know. So
yeah,
so I try to focus on, I also ask them, what is it that you feel is an area of concern for you? Mm-hmm. So there's a little boy that has Angelman syndrome, which is another neurological disorder, and this is an awesome kid in family. And so we often will chat. For a while, the speech therapist and I were co-treating to try to work on his feeding and his communication skills. But then we decided that it was too much for him, and that I needed to just work on the feeding skills. And in this area, I'm really just trying to work on his grasp and using of a utensil, not so much he actually likes to eat. He probably could use some more oral motor stuff, but so we've been working on poking with a fork, and then he didn't even like to grasp the fork, so a lot of time it would get flung. And so I was kind of doing like a little bit of hand over hand, but then there was also these straps that one of my colleagues found that kind of silicone strap that slides onto the utensil. And so now we kind of found one. The mom said, oh yeah, those are great. Huh. And she ordered some, and he was using it today. Mom also super intuitive. She was like, I want him to be able to drink. He's never going to be able to drink out of an open cup, because he's just going to pour it. And instead of just focusing on using a sippy cup, I mean, this kid did a bottle, but then she was like, I think we ought to just go right to a straw. And I think you're right. It's going to take him that long. He's using a straw with a cup with a lid that he thinks he's so cool now. And it's awesome, because that's more age appropriate, as he is now, you know, 5 turning 6. So that's another, just one more area we deal with. So.
And that's a really cool partnership that you have with parents.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And there's other times, you know, there's sometimes that coming to therapy for some parent, that might be the only time the mom has 1 hour to herself, and so it's okay. I mean, we want that involvement, but if they want to go run an errand, I get it. You know, they just need a breather sometimes. So I don't think I answered how do I measure that. I measure looking at goals, but also if in a session, if something's not working, I might have to drop back and punt. Like, this isn't happening. And sometimes there's a boy that a speech therapist and I see down the valley, actually, and he is limited on his verbal communication. He now points to things, which is great, but he has autism and has developed a lot of different behaviors. And, you know, he just became so frustrated the one day, he just, you know, came out and kind of bit me. That obviously, and I couldn't, what the therapist and I were talking about later was, is it the lack of structure? Because we're trying to follow his lead, but sometimes it's so open that they don't know what is expected of them. So often what I do is we'll drop a list, we'll write a list. I get to choose some things, you get to choose some things. Or we structure it so that it's fun, but I get to work on some things, but you also get to maybe have a little control in this. And you can choose the game, or I'll give them a choice of 2 games.
Yeah.
What do you want to do? You know, here's, okay, that's number 1. What are we doing for number 2? And maybe we can even go out of order. For some kids, other kids, no. Okay, we're done number 1, because for some kids, we have to keep it really structured, depending upon what their needs are. So,
So it's very adaptive. It's kind of, this is working, this isn't working.
Yep.
It's a breeding ground probably for innovation and finding new ways to do things.
Yeah, so I have another young girl that is really amazing. She was born without an arm on her right side and more like a finger arm on this side, and then shortened limbs. Mm-hmm. An amazing kid that has challenged me to come up with very creative ways to help her to be as independent as possible in her human occupation and engagement. So she couldn't feed herself. And so I actually had somebody sew a cuff, and we made a pocket to put a spoon in, because she had shoulder movement and she could elevate her shoulder and she could feed herself a little bit with that. But the ultimate goal for her was that she would get a prosthesis. So I had a student at the time who had seen a woman when she was a student that had been born congenitally, was missing part of her arm, and this woman had a prosthetic arm, and she came to talk to their class. And so my student actually contacted this woman, and then I eventually talked to this woman. She's like, you need to go to Ryan Blank. He is the upper extremity guy you want to go to. He is in Gig Harbor, Washington. And so I connected with him. We Skyped. He was able to observe the little girl that I was working with. And we, you know, just let's talk about this process. How does this is, you're in a different state, they're in Montana. How does this happen? What do we have to do? And so it took us probably close to a year, but November she got a prosthetic arm. And it's they call it a myoelectric hand, which means she is able to push a button with her body and open and close that hand as needed. It still has, the elbow has to be positioned and the shoulder has to be positioned, but his thought process was to start simple and build for success, and then what eventually, because she can't really functionally use that to feed herself because she can't bend her elbow up and down, but she cut using regular scissors and made her dad a birthday card, and so she cut out a little football using her prosthetic arm for the first time. So that was really cool. That was very exciting to see. So yeah, being able to, what are the needs? And her needs are very different from a kid that has autism or a child that just might have some other sensory issues, totally different. So yeah, very adaptable.
That's an awesome success story.
Yeah.
Something else that I really find a big success is the way you're able to network with other professions too and kind of create this continuum of care for these individuals.
Yeah.
You're right here in an office with speech pathologists and other types of helping professions, and then you can connect other places.
Yeah, I think that's huge. It's about the team, right? And about connecting in with other people that are providing services for this child. And the other thing that we didn't talk about actually is it's the child and the family. It's not just the child, really. Have to connect in big with whoever the caretakers are, because it's that family unit. And so what is a goal that's important to that family might be different from another family. And so that's really critical too, I think, and looking at that big picture of who is this child, you know, family, and what does this family like to do, you know. So that's all part of human occupation. Yeah. So one of the other kids that came to mind was, I had a girl that I saw for a number of years, and she had limited verbal communication. She actually had some sign communication, and I wasn't really great with that, so she used to laugh at me sometimes. But she also used communication, it was called PECS, and it's picture exchange communication. So if I want you to get my Legos down, I would hand you the picture for Legos, and then you would know that's what I wanted. But as she grew older, then, and technology evolved, the iPad came out, and there's some augmented communication devices that are on, you know, enable on the iPad. So she had an iPad too, and you know, the speech therapist and I used to take her out sometimes to go get lunch and let her try to order without us prompting everything, so that maybe she would eventually, and she is now, I think she's 19 now, you know, she's living in a group home up near the Flathead. And anyway, one of the activities that she and I did was we made a case. We sewed a bag. She picked out the material. She hand sewed the whole bag for her iPad to go in. And, you know, what what would be something she would be interested in. And she loved horses. She used to go riding down the Bitterroot riding. And so she picked out horse material. And, and anyway, so, you know, just that creativity, what's going to float her boat and what's going to be, what's something that can be beneficial while having us the ability to sew. You know, maybe even using a sewing machine someday would be something that she could possibly do. And so we kind of worked towards that direction.
Wow.
Yeah. So
it's even crossing over into employment skills in the future.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Actually, that's another whole big area of that transition to young adulthood, because what happens a lot of times is, you know, kind of stops at high school. And then you have all these young adults that are out there, some falling through the cracks, mm-hmm. some who do get services, that continuum into adulthood and aging through the lifespan is what occupational therapy deals with. But some of the mental health issues, you know, they don't just stop just because you graduated high school. So what are some of the skills that you might need to be more independent riding a bus? You know, if you're not going to be able to drive a car, which you might not be able to because you can't process all that information at once, that's the highest level of what they call praxis and motor planning, which is the ability to perform, you know, have an idea and process all this information visually, auditory, while doing a motor task. Traffic's coming the other way. There's a bus stopped up here. People are getting off. I mean, it's the highest level of skill.
A lot,
that you can,
yeah.
When we know people that aren't technically impaired, that have driving impairments. Right. Anyway, so that's a whole nother area. We're adapting the home even. If, you know, you need to have how's a child that can't sit up, you know, being able to be in the bathtub and be supported and be able to take a bath mm-hmm. if they can't sit on their own. So there's, you know, different bathing equipment even. So.
Gosh, and I'm sure we could go on.
I know,
and on.
I know.
It's amazing.
Sorry.
No, that's totally fine. And this is great. And maybe just to wrap it up, mm-hmm. what do you want people to know? Because I think, you know, these kids are with you, like I said, only part of the week. And then they're going to go and interface with all of these other people, some of them in helping professions, some of them aren't in helping professions. But what do you want people to know who work with these kids on a daily basis?
About the kids.
How to work with the kids.
How to work with the kids, I think, is really trying to meet them at their level at that time. You're going to see behaviors when the demands of the environment are too high for the functional level or the capabilities at the time. You're going to mm-hmm. see meltdowns, and you're going to see behaviors because you're asking way too much of them. And so that's kind of one of the things that I always try to, okay, so you want to, it's called the just right challenge. That's where you come from with the OT. You want to give them challenging enough that they can perform, but not so high that they don't feel like they were successful or they melt down, and not so low that it's not even a challenge at all. So you want to come with that just right challenge and support them and the family. What are the things we can do to help the family? So I might have a different idea of what I'm thinking the child might want, but ultimately, I'm not the parent, I'm not the family. And so we need mm-hmm. for the family's goals to be really important.
And that's something you can always do, is just if it gets out of control or if the child's not being challenged, you can always just attend back to the situation.
Right, and you can upgrade
and
or downgrade
on.
The activity,
yeah.
which is what, you know, okay, this activity is way too high. We got to bring this down. Like this, you're asking a kid that's 3 to do a 25-piece puzzle. No, let's look at a more basic activity, you know, that might work. Or even don't, like I said, at if they're getting ready for school, often how we perform in the morning, like if I'm running around crazy, my kids would be also at that level emotionally. I'll give one example too. So here's one of the things. Also recognizing the skills that they do have and trying to support them versus doing for them would be another thing. So my son, my idea of being a mom was my mother cooked a full meal for us, but I wasn't that good. So except for maybe on the weekends. So cereal. So I would get the bowl out and get the cereal out and I'd pour the milk and everything. But I knew my son could actually get that for himself because he would have it for snack sometime. Until one morning I went down And it was like, I was running late. So I'm like, John, just go down and, you know, get your cereal, get your breakfast, right? I come down, he's sitting at the table, nothing there. And that's when I knew I poured the milk too long. That was like, I did it. I poured the milk too long. I can't believe I did it. So the just right challenge, right?
So even the experts sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I had an OT buddy one time tell me, she goes, I didn't realize that my son couldn't button. How could I do that as an OT that he couldn't button? But so I will give you a couple of other things that I have just because of the way times have changed, too. So when I talked with the one group of, it was CASA workers, and there were foster parents there, and there was a really awesome foster mom that had talked about one of her children, and she was saying that this kid basically had stayed in his car seat the whole time. This is becoming a norm for not just kids that are in the system, but, you know, we call them container kids. And so you move the container from one space to the other, like they're in the car seat, in their car. Then they move them, they're feeding them in the car seat because it's like an infant feeder seat, right? They're not putting them on the floor. And you need to be down on the floor to explore your environment and also to build your extensor muscles on your tummy. You need some tummy time to push up and get into a crawling position to then develop reciprocal crawling and then move to pulling up to stand and those developmental skills. So that's one of my pet peeves right now. My other pet peeves are just need to do this. So now they have all these pouches that the kids eat out of. You know, they're kind of like for runners
Go-Gurt or something.
Yeah. Or any of the pouches that, like maybe if you climb, right? I don't know. But they have those energy pouches too, right? But which is great that kids can be independent. But kids now don't know how to take food off a spoon, believe it or not. They're spoon feeding deficits, right? Because they just squeeze it or they suck it out, and then it's a different motion than removing off with a spoon. So that's one of my pet that we have to, you know, teach these skills. There's bike riding deficits now because kids aren't getting out riding bikes, and or they might not live in a place where the parents are able to get them out on the, you know,
right. There's just safety.
And so there's a lot of different areas that getting kids used to go to the park to play pickup, you know, a pickup game, right? Nope, it's all organized sports now. And so there's a lot of, you know, play that's, they don't get the imaginative play that you and I might have had where you just have a box and you make that box be a car or it can be a plane and you're zooming it around. So a lot of things are more, you know, the 2D, it's already there for you. Oh, look, it's a plane versus creating in your imagination.
Well, that was a lot of good information. No, I really appreciate it and good advice. And I just want to say thank you again for agreeing to talk with me.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. And it's nice to be able to talk about occupational therapy, especially during Occupational Therapy Month.
Oh, yeah. April is Occupational Therapy Month. So if you hear this in April, be sure to celebrate your OT friends. Okay, so that was a great conversation, and I really want to say thanks again to Chris for speaking with me and showing me around her office. And thanks for the great advice. I think my favorite lesson was the Just Right Challenge. That really seems to be something anyone can incorporate into their work with kids and families, and it also speaks to the idea of just being present and seeing things from someone else's point of view. Anyways, that's it for my conversation with Chris. And I hope you enjoyed both parts 1 and 2 of this episode. Again, part 1 laid the foundation for a lot of what we talked about here, so if you haven't already, go back and give it a listen. There are some really fun topics as well. Be sure to join me again soon for discussions on more topics that affect kids and families in Montana. Thanks again to Ira Wolf for the music, as always, and thanks to you all for listening. Please don't forget that you can send us your feedback, questions, etc., to the email address ccfwd@mso.umt.edu. Or you can visit our website for a ton of great resources, and that's at the web address health.umt.edu/ccfwd. I'll also give a plug for our Facebook page. We post updates, new info, exciting and innovative program ideas, and links to trainings across the state there. Just go to the address www.facebook.com/ccfwd. And be sure to like our page. So that's it. This has been part 2 of an interview with occupational therapist Chris Graydon on the Center for Children, Families, and Workforce Development podcast. As always, I'm Zach Reamer. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to do something to take care of yourself this week. See you next time.